From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of January 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett from TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois, will be here to look at the cash grain market. We'll talk about the weather forecast with Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather in Chicago. It looks like tomorrow and especially Saturday could be rough, and it may even get worse next week by the time we get to Tuesday across the Midwest. He has an update of South American weather, too, as we wrap up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media at the University of Illinois.
WILL programming is made possible by the Illinois Pork Producers. Todd Gleason will present a Market Outlook Roundtable featuring Steve Meyer, Tom Fitzenmeyer, and Jackie Fakes on February 5th during the Illinois Pork Expo at the Peoria Civic Center. All farmers welcome. More info at ilpork.com.
Let's check the numbers now as they settled up at the CME Group in Chicago. March corn up 6 cents at 4.33 and a half. The May there at 4.39 and a half, 5 and a half higher. And July at $4.43 and a half, up 4 and a quarter. December corn at 4.50 and a quarter, up 3 and a half cents. The March wheat at 5.53 and a half, 2 higher. May at 5.56 and a quarter, up 0.25 cents. And July wheat at $5.59 and 3 quarters for the soft red in Chicago, 0.25 cent higher. Hard red July at $6.25, up a half. Soy complex bean futures, $12.75 in the lead option. March, a settlement price up 5 3/4. May at $12.61, 4 1/4 higher. In July at $12.46, up 3 1/2 cents. August at $12.05, 2 1/4 higher. In September futures at $11.39. Up a half for the day. January contract at $11.02 3/4 cents, 1/4 cent higher. And the bean meal futures, March contract at $4.25.20. That's up $1.90. Bean oil at $37.07. Finished 3 cents lower on the day. November futures, by the way, in the bean pit at $10.97 1/4 for the new crop, were down 0.5 cent. Live cattle futures in the April contract at $140.52 1/2 cents, unchanged. The feeder cattle finished up the March at $168.70, down 52 1/2. And the lean hogs at $93.62 1/2, or 17 1/2 cents lower in the April. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day. March contract, $98.11, up 75 cents a barrel. February gasoline or wholesale price in the RBOB at $2.67 3/10 a cent a gallon, up 1 1/3 cents. And ethanol futures trading $1.89 1/10, 6 3/10 of a cent higher. The difference between the two is now 78.2 cents wide. That's down a nickel for the, or rather down 5 cents for the day. Natural gas, $5.02 6/10 of a cent, down 4 3/10. And diesel fuel at $3.22, 3 8/10 of a cent higher. Gold futures trading $1,242.40 an ounce, finished $19.80 lower for the afternoon. We'll check the weather forecast in just a moment. A couple of reminders that if you have not purchased your tickets yet for All-Day Agricultural Outlook to be held over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, on Tuesday, the 4th day of March, now might be a good time to make a phone call at 217-333-7300 and purchase your tickets. They're just $30. All of our analysts will be there. Sue Martin will be along. Everybody else, too, including Dan Zwicker, over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. This is our 25th anniversary, and you'll get a special 25th anniversary hat for your cost of admission. That's at the Beef House at 217-333-7300 for the All-Day Ag Outlook. A quick look at the weather forecast says tonight a slight chance of rain and then snow. Cloudy, a low of 21 degrees. Tomorrow, 50% chance of snow. After 7 a.m., cloudy and a high of 30. Friday night, snow likely, mainly after 7, cloudy and 26. East-northeast winds in. 70% chance of snowfall, accumulation of 1 to 2 inches. On Friday night and Saturday, snow likely before 7 a.m. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of the half hour. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
On this 30th day of January, let's check the marketplace with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we're looking for rougher weather as we make it into the weekend. Always interested to see how things are down south. What kind of temps do you have for the day?
Well, we've had a mess earlier this week with the ice and the cold weather, but things are thawing out a little bit and beginning to warm up a little bit. But we're about like everybody else in the country, still below normal on the temperature front anyway.
Well, that makes our 35 degrees outside feel pretty good today, I would guess.
Yeah, it does. It does feel. But it's interesting living in the South. And, of course, you can see on the TV what kind of mess they got themselves on the interstates there in Birmingham and Atlanta. Is, you know, nobody has any salt, nobody has any sand, so snow equipment is non-existent. So when you get an ice storm like this, I got a kick out of it. The natives were, if you didn't know better, you thought a hurricane was coming because they all headed to the grocery store, and you couldn't even buy a loaf of bread or a gallon of milk the other night because everybody was gearing up for maybe losing power for a couple days.
And then she turns into a skating rink down there.
Right.
And that turns ugly. The family and I made a trip down that way through Birmingham, in fact, maybe five years ago, they had the same sort of situation, and it was not pretty. It was scary, actually, being on the road, so be safe.
Yeah.
Be safe down there. Okay, so speaking of scary, producers are wondering at this point what they're going to need to do for both new and old crop, or corn, soybeans, and even wheat, trying to think through the process for 2014. Have you given it, and I know you have, much thought looking further out and what your cycles have to tell you about this marketplace?
Well, the corn-soybean ratio, you know, everybody's been talking about a big switch to soybean acres, and naturally, I mean, that is where the momentum is. I mean, there is going to be some switching, but you can see Informa Economics backed off of that a couple million acres on their most recent report. I think if you're going to get a real large jump in soybean acres and a 4 million acre or a five million acre drop in corn, you're going to have to get that corn soybean ratio up closer to 3-to-1 rather than this 2.5-to-1, and that's where it's been. But there's no doubt in the fringe areas where I have been this winter anyway, you do know. More soybean acres are coming. It's just a question of, you know, how much and whatnot. And that's going to, I think, limit soybean upside potential. We do have a big crop coming out of South America. The exporters tell me that about 250 to 400,000 tons of new crop soybeans have already left the country in South America. And February, they're probably going to maybe crank that number all the way up to 2.5 million tons, which is, from a historical point of view, very, very early, simply because in years past, you really didn't get much competition out of South America until you got into late March. April was a big month. May is a big month. So Brazil is gradually, for all practical purposes, is a year-round supplier of soybeans to the world. They still have a lot of infrastructure to do to become a much smoother supplier to the world without all of the interruptions and that. But Brazil is going to be a big problem for us as we go down the road in soybeans. So, but our export sales came out okay, 500,000 tons here today. Now, 500,000 of unknown destinations were actually switched to known destinations. Some people call that maybe a cancellation. Whatever the case may be, it was just basically unknown destinations switched to a known destination, and that's why our exports were only 500,000. Corn, 1.8 million tons of corn sales. I'm not sure if that's the biggest of the marketing year. It's definitely, if it's not, it's right up against that. That was, you know, 74, 75 million bushels of corn in one crack. That is excellent. Now, when you take that number and you add to the sales pace that we've had since September 1st, we're up to about like 87% complete of USDA's number. And if that pace would continue, we're talking about maybe bringing exports up to 1.6 billion bushels. Now, that would be 150 million more than what USDA has on the balance sheet. But if that would be realized, that's going to come out of carryout. So carryout's coming down. You know, it wasn't too long ago everybody was wanting to talk about 2 billion plus. After the January report, it came down to 1.6. And then if we whack another 150 out of that on exports, all of a sudden we're talking about 1.3 or something on the corn, which is a big, big turnaround. Now, I know the bear's going to argue we got problems in the feed and residual number, but that's something that we'll have to work out and see how that plays out over time. I'm in the opinion that USDA has a production number too large, and that maybe explains some of it. And I think a lot of it ended up in last year's marketing year because demand for ethanol was so strong. So I think some of those bushels that was produced in this 13-14 crop year went backwards into the 12-13 crop. I think the fundamentals are not too bad. Beans you have to worry about because those South American beans are going to come at us at some point in time. But I think the corn market is laying the groundwork to be much more price positive as we go down the road than probably what everybody was thinking a month ago. We're going to end up the month with a monthly reversal to the upside. And I think today's price action really gives us a good shot to punch out the crop report high as we go toward the end of the month. And that would be a close right up against the high point of the month. So I'm kind of thinking March corn futures has a shot at 450. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if December corn takes a run at 460. So I'm a little optimistic, at least on the corn front here this morning after I saw the export sales number and the way the market's performed.
So on demand side then, if for the soybeans, the United States and South America usually battle it out for the export market. It's time and it's coming earlier than it has for the soybeans to turn their attention to South America. That's bearish the bean market. That's what you told me.
Right.
And for corn, the U.S. has tended to be the only place, really the largest place by leaps and bounds to export corn. I'm wondering whether there is enough wheat at some point that would come into the marketplace, because a lot of the world will use feed wheat rather than corn to damper what you've just told us about the marketplace.
Well, there's no doubt about it that the wheat market, I mean, we made new lows for the year. Wheat is in a counter-seasonal decline. wheat should be making highs at this point of view. When you look at a normal average seasonal pattern, maybe that's going to reverse. Maybe we're going to make a low when we normally make a high. That still has a lot of weather to put in it. We'll have to see how the late winter spring weather pattern plays out. But if it has a tendency to stay cold like this winter has, we could get ourselves in some actually good kill conditions on that wheat crop. So that wheat crop has a tendency that's very, very vulnerable, I think, to maybe not making the big number. But there is no doubt about it. We've got a lot of wheat around the world, but it's not all in the bin yet either. So we'll have to see how that plays.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us on this Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Now here's Dave Dickey, your Director of Agricultural Programming, with a look at today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, Potash Corporation of Saskatchewan posted a 45% drop in fourth quarter earnings today as it continued to battle slumping prices for potash in the wake of last year's breakup of a Russian-Belarusian trading partnership. Potash Corporation said its fourth quarter profit fell to $230 million, or 26 cents a share, hurt in part by a 5-cent a share charge for job cuts made in December. A year earlier, it earned $421 million, or 48 cents a share. The company said gross margin fell as lower prices for all three fertilizer nutrients, potash, nitrogen, and phosphate, outweighed improved costs and higher volume sales. Bloomberg News is reporting today that groups lobbying the new farm bill spent more than $100 million for and against provisions in that legislation in just the first 9 months of 2013. At least 325 companies and organizations registered as lobbyists in 2013 to work on the Senate's farm bill through the end of October. That's a fifth most of any legislation. Only bills on the federal budget, appropriations, immigration, and defense generated more lobbying interest than did the farm bill. A Central Illinois farm family has agreed to pay $5.3 million in an out-of-court settlement with the federal government, which alleged that the family had manipulated statutory caps on farm program payments from 2002 through 2008. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Central Illinois alleged that Dowson Farms of DuVernon, Illinois, violated the False Claims Act by creating what they called sham entities. As a result, Dowson Farms and its principal owners collected farm subsidies they were not entitled to collect, that according to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Under the 2002 Farm Bill, no person can receive payments from more than three entities in which the person held substantial beneficial interest. Candy maker Hershey Company today said its fourth quarter earnings rose 24%, helped by a strong holiday season in North America. Overall, the company reported a fourth quarter profit of $186.1 million, or 82 cents a share, up from $149.9 million, or 66 cents a share a year earlier. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This morning, I was at the State Fairgrounds in Springfield at the Illinois Department of Agriculture to speak with the enumerators. They will probably be sitting down at many of your kitchen tables to fill out a blue and white report you received in the mail. likely already. It's called the Agricultural Resources Management Survey Cost and Returns Report for 2013. This is a very long and detailed report, 24 pages of stats and statistics and numbers that you have to fill in. They wanted to know what I thought about it. And I asked the folks here in the Farm Doc offices upstairs, those are the Ag Economists, what they thought in terms of how often they use this kind of information. Of course, it's aggregated, and they say every day, every day. So here's the thing. You may not like it. You may not want to give it up. And when you read through it, it's really intrusive. But the numbers do make a difference, and I think they make a difference, frankly, in the kinds of policies that end up serving producers in agriculture across the nation, like the Farm Bill just released yesterday or passed by the House and probably by the Senate next week. They'll come into your home, and hopefully you will have the numbers already in hand and be able to fill it out for them. But do know that they get used every day by ag economists to try to help and put together information for you. Some of that information actually goes back into D.C., I know, in terms of crop insurance and other kinds of policy-making decisions. So please try to fill them out. The folks in the Ag Econ department and everybody who deals with stats simply says trash in, trash out. I'd actually, frankly, prefer that you not fill it out and rather than lie to them about it. So I think I have said enough. Maybe we better turn our attention to the cash grain market and talk to Matt Bennett. Matt, you ever have to fill out any of those information for your farms?
Yes, I have.
You always tell them the truth, don't you?
Actually, I do.
That's good. Because, well, you're a broker, and you know, I guess, that these numbers make a difference.
Yep.
I know when I talk to the brokers, they make a difference to them, and you guys did not like it, in fact, when NAS wasn't available and the reports weren't around. So,
right.
There will be some that get mad at me for this, but that's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. Okay, tell me about the marketplace there. We've got a couple of minutes to talk about the cash grain market. How's base has been holding up? I know farmers have been moving some corn.
Yeah, we've been getting some corn in, been trying to ship some out. One of the bigger processors we deal with gave us a bid delivered by Feb 15. They wanted corn and wanted it in the next couple of weeks. So it's interesting to me that here at the end of January, we still have quick ship bids, and we've had them all the way through. So by all means, I don't think that the pipeline's necessarily full just yet.
Well, there's an interesting thing because we were just talking with Zwicker, and Dan was of the idea that this big number, this 1.8, that was a big number, one of the biggest he can remember, if not the largest, for the export market. And he seems to think the export market might tick on through, and we could build that number to what? I don't know, up another 150 million bushels. That could change things.
I agree. Yes, I agree with him. And I think that what you're going to see is good, steady exports all the way through. I don't think South America is going to come with quite as many exports as what they've had, just simply based on what their acreage mix was this year. And, you know, by all means, I think that we're very competitive in the world market right now.
Okay, so that would put us down somewhere between, well, let's say 1.2. And I'm going to give a number that doesn't mean any difference. 1.2 billion might be pipeline. It might be bigger or smaller than that.
Mm-hmm.
Does it change very much kind of the bottom line? How much does it move the marketplace in terms of where we stand today? Any at all?
I think that it can, by all means. What it does for us more than anything is maybe gives us a little bit of base underneath us, you know, a little bit of support underneath the market. I think that corn's maybe had a hard time rallying due to, you know, some of the underlying weakness and what people are seeing as a huge bean crop coming out of the southern hemisphere. It's been hard for corn to rally, but I don't think that it's going to necessarily fall out of bed now either.
Right, and your bids for the day?
Yeah, cash corn 421, fall 4.25, 1278 on cash beans, and 1063 for fall.
Hey, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Matt Bennett is with TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us on this Thursday afternoon closing market report. Back in 2 minutes.
It's National Croissant Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1516, Duke Wilhelm IV of Bavaria instituted what was probably the world's first consumer protection law. It established purity standards on German beer. Before a committee consisting of gentry and knights, he ruled that only barley, hops, and water could be used in brewing beer. The regulation remained in effect until 1986, more than four centuries later. In 1744, Aziel Wilkinson was born, an American blacksmith. He was among the first to use water power to manufacture farm tools, domestic utensils, and cut nails. In 1888, Asa Gray died, a leading American botanist of his time and a supporter of Charles Darwin. He co-authored Flora of North America with John Torrey. And in 1948, Orville Wright died. He, along with his brother Wilbur, invented the first powered airplane. 5 years after that first 12-second flight, they were producing the Model A, capable of flight for over 2 hours. And that's this day in agricultural history.
If you haven't purchased your tickets yet for the All-Day Ag Outlook, dial this number, 217-333-7300. It's the fourth day of March. That's a Tuesday. The number to call, 217-333-7300. Check out our website, too, at willag.org. We'll keep you up to date on where we're going to be and who we'll be with. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us, Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Mike, it looks like actually your area and parts of the northern Midwest will be inundated in the next few days by some rough weather patterns. Let's start there, please.
Yeah, we do have some fairly significant weather moving through the Midwest over the next 7 to 10 days. The first system that we have to monitor is the one that moves through tomorrow night and more so on Saturday. We're looking for a swath of 4 to 8 inches of snow, primarily across the northern one-third of Illinois, and then stretching on to the east through far northern Indiana, southern Michigan, and Ohio. That is fairly important from a transportation standpoint because the Interstate 80 corridor will be seeing some pretty decent snowfall with that. And in actuality, we'll see light snowfall stretching all the way back through Interstate 80, back through Nebraska into Colorado, and even Utah, where heavy snowfall occurs in the mountains of the Rockies. So that's system number one. The potentially more important system, and the one that really needs to be followed by a lot of people across the Midwest, is the one that moves through on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. We do have a very large system that will move on to the east from the Pacific Ocean, and at the same time, a separate system drops onto the south from the Arctic. Sometimes when these systems get too close together, they merge into one large system, and there is the possibility for that to occur. If that were to happen, we'd see widespread snowfall across the central and southern plains and through a large portion of the Midwest, with 3 to 6 inches, a fairly common number, with potentially much more than that across parts of the eastern Corn Belt. Now, this system is still about 5 to 6 days away, so things can change, and the path of that system will be very important. But we do have some fairly high confidence that some portion of the Midwest or the Northeast U.S. is going to see a major snowstorm from this storm. So that will be something to follow. As far as agriculture goes, it could just cause some fairly substantial transportation problems across the Midwest and Plains, maybe some stress for cattle out in Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma. But for the on the good side of things, we could see a nice little soil moisture boost for driest hard red winter wheat in the Plains, and also soft red winter wheat across the Corn Belt, and the eastern U.S. could see a pretty nice event from that, too.
It appears from the radar that South America, yesterday at least, and a few days before that, I think, managed to pick up some rainfall in some of the growing regions. What did you see there?
Well, we do have an interesting pattern that's begun in South America. It will last for another 7 to 10 days, but a very large area of upper-level high pressure is suppressing rainfall across a big area of Brazil. Now, initially, that's really going to help to move harvesting of first crop corn and soybeans along, but this could be a bit of an issue if it lasts for too long because this region averages around 3.5 inches of rain every 10 days, and we're looking for some areas to receive no rain during the next 10 days. So newly planted crops could become stressed if that pattern lasts too long. Conversely, we were once concerned about dryness in Argentina as recently as 10 to 14 days ago, but they will be the primary beneficiary of this pattern with multiple rounds of thunderstorms almost every day throughout the period. We're looking for 3 to 6 inches of rain, in parts of that area, and they average around 1 to 1.5 inches per 7 to 10 days. So flooding is a possibility, which is hard to believe, but you know how it is with weather. I mean, things can change fairly quickly, and that's what's happened down there.
That's Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. You've been listening to the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.